Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Mihiyawak and the Nakoda. I'm your host, Kristen Andrews. On today's show...
Stop the genocide in Kashmir!
Stop the genocide in Kashmir!
This is life and death for me. You know, this is not something I dabble in.
I put it down to the fact that we who are working in solidarity and support with Palestinians are winning the battle.
But first, here are the headlines. Pivot Legal Society recently released a Know Your Rights Handbook, a guide for people who rely on public space. Catherine Fisher of CJLY on Sinaixt traditional territory in BC brings us the details.
The Pivot Legal Society is a Vancouver organization working in partnership with communities affected by poverty and social exclusion to identify priorities and develop solutions to complex human rights issues. The Society recently released the Know Your Rights Toolkit, available now on their website. This resource is designed for people who rely on public space, as well as advocates and service providers who work alongside them. It covers charter-related rights, speaking with police, searches, rights on arrest and detention, search warrants, property seizure, bylaw enforcement and disputes, and dealing with private security, among other things. It also outlines how to make a complaint to municipal police or the RCMP. The Know Your Rights Handbook came out of a series of community-based workshops in Vancouver and was funded by the Law Foundation of British Columbia. It's available on the Pivot Legal Society's webpage in the Community Resources tab.
Statistics Canada published research earlier this summer that provides a deeper understanding of the Indigenous suicide crisis than was previously available. Overall, First Nations had a suicide rate three times that of non-Indigenous Canadians, while Inuit had a rate nine times as high, and Métis two times as high. Indigenous youth and young adults had the highest rates. Inuit had rates of 23.9 times as high, and First Nations 6.2 times as high, as non-Indigenous Canadians also in the 15 to 24 age range. Mohan Kumar was the lead researcher on the report.
While these look like just numbers, there is a person behind them, and their death meant an incredible loss to family, friends, community, and the society at large.
The report analyzed how five socioeconomic factors, education, employment, income, marital status, and location, connect to a larger amount of the disproportionality in suicide rates. It also found that for First Nations, the suicide rate is two times as high for those living on reserve as for those off reserve. There is much more to this story, the most important part being that some appropriate response to this crisis is needed. The report's findings are covered in more detail at National Observer, equitableeducation.ca, or at the StatsCan website itself. Credit to Greg McDougall of equitableeducation.ca. That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back. Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. You just heard the Rio Statics with the title track from their 2019 album, Here Come the Wolves. Now it's time for our feature stories. More than a month after the unilateral annexation of the officially semi-autonomous states of Kashmir and Jammu, members of the Kashmiri diaspora within India and abroad are desperate for news of their families caught behind Prime Minister Narendra Modi's virtual Iron Curtain. September 7th, members of Victoria's Masjid al-Iman Mosque and their allies marched to the British Columbia Legislature in Victoria to show solidarity for Kashmiris and demand the Canadian government investigate human rights abuses allegedly occurring in Kashmir now.
Stop killing in Kashmir!
Stop killing in Kashmir!
Assalamu alaikum. Peace upon everyone. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Start with the name of Allah, who is merciful. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming in here. I would like to ask Imam Ismail, the Imam of Masjid al-Iman, Victoria Mosque, to come in and say a few words. Imam Ismail, everybody.
Dear brothers and sisters in humanity, let me begin by thanking you for being here today, showing your support, your solidarity. It is easy to forget that many people across the world do not enjoy the same privileges, the same rights that we have here in Canada. And again, it is easy to think that this issue is something that is happening across the world. It does not have any impact in our daily lives. But the reality is, if we do not stand up, if we do not give a voice to those who think they do not have a voice, if we do not stand up and help those who feel helpless, we are not doing our part as human beings. And if we forget them, we will ourselves be forgotten.
I would like to now ask Sharmarke Debo to come up and say a few words. Sharmarke is a city councillor with the city of Victoria, and he has spoken about the human rights all over the world. So here's Sharmarke Debo.
Thank you, brother, and thank you so much for inviting me. The blockout of communication and families who live all around the world, who have families in Kashmir, are not hearing more than a month of where their life is and their daily, day-to-day life. So as we live here in a peaceful country, that today we stand in solidarity, you go back to your daily activities. And think about it, people who are in Kashmir that are not able to do that and don't have the freedom that we have every single day here. And that is why today that I join with you in solidarity and in solidarity people in Kashmir to say that we hear you, we see you, we care for you, and we will speak for you. Thank you for coming to show solidarity.
Zara Brabra.
Salam, everyone. I'm very grateful that you people have come here and gathered here to show your support for Kashmir. 33 days of communication blockade, 12 million people and 800,000 army personnel. It doesn't look like normal. It's occupation. More than 4,000 people are being detained. Children are being detained. They're being beaten up. There are being night raids in Kashmir. And Indian media shows that everything is normal. The local journalists are not able to show what's happening in Kashmir. There have been human rights violations from past 70 years, but this is the worst that is happening where you don't know what's happening. People are being killed. I just want people all around the globe to get to know about what's happening in Kashmir and raise their voices for Kashmiris. I don't want you to speak for Kashmiris. I want you to amplify your voices for Kashmir. So that is how much I want to say right now, because I won't be able to speak more than this.
Thank you very much, Zara. And we speak on our behalf, and we are here standing up in solidarity with her and all the other Kashmiris. The people of Kashmir want to decide. Let them decide. Free Kashmir, free Kashmir.
Free Kashmir, free Kashmir.
Stop killing in Kashmir.
Stop killing in Kashmir.
Free Kashmir, free Kashmir.
Free Kashmir, free Kashmir.
Stop the genocide in 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 Kashmir.
Stop the genocide.
This report was brought to us by Chris Cook of radio station CFUV 101.9 FM at the University of Victoria, broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Coast Salish people, specifically the Lekwungen and Wassanik peoples, and is the territory covered by the Douglas Treaties. In that report, we heard Mohammed Ghouri introduce speakers, Iman Ismail Noor, Victoria City Councillor, Sharmarki Dubao, and Kashmiri human rights law doctoral student Zehra Abrar. News of a Canadian Armed Forces reservist attempting to use posters to recruit Winnipeggers into a white supremacist group known as the Base made national headlines when it was broken by the Winnipeg Free Press back in August. Reservist Patrick Matthews has since been barred from the forces and has disappeared. Comparatively little attention has been given to the prominent and at times controversial role played by anti-racist and anti-fascist organizing taking place in the Prairie City over the last 2 years. The following report comes to us from Michael Welsh of CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg Aking, homeland of the Métis Nation and historical territory of the Nihiowak and the Nakoda.
Save your race, join the Base. Those were the words printed at the top of black and white posters spotted on utility poles and in public locations throughout Winnipeg this past summer. The Base, along with the Proud Boys, the Soldiers of Odin, and the Worldwide Coalition Against Islam, are among the growing list of racist organizations that have erupted on the fringes of Canadian society in recent years. In Winnipeg, a group by the name of Fascist Free Treaty 1, a reference to the traditional territory on which Winnipeg is located, has been at the forefront of striking back against groups that trade in hatred and white supremacy.
One of our followers, one of our supporters, sent us a poster. We researched this kind of stuff, we knew what it was right away. So they sent it to us, and we posted it up on our Facebook and our Twitter. And within minutes, we got a response saying, I took down that poster.
Omar Kinnaroth is among the more visible members of Fascist Free Treaty 1, a Muslim, business owner, and family man. Kinnaroth believes that Winnipeg is one of the most difficult cities in the country for hate groups to organize, owing to the strong links that anti-fascists have with the wider community.
We do anti-fascism as a community response rather than, you know, a setup to counter or whatnot. Anything in the last couple of years has been met with huge resistance, whether it's neo-Nazis, whether it's Proud Boys, whether it's these militia type groups. You have literally thousands of people who are engaged in this, in anti-fascism, anti-racism in Winnipeg, so it's great.
One of the more controversial moves by Fascist Free Treaty 1 were its efforts to deny a space to members of the People's Party of Canada. The PPC, headed by Quebec MP Maxime Bernier, is seen by many as aligned with community members holding racist and xenophobic views. Consequently, when Omar found out that the Creatory, an inclusive artists gallery in the city's Exchange District, was allowing the party to organize an event on the premises, he contacted the gallery owner to educate her about what the PPC was all about and discourage the gallery from hosting them.
Folks got in touch, and after kind of folks close to her gave her the details of the situation, and me personally in our group, you know, she contacted me and said that she canceled it. Now, what happened after that was just like a media blow up.
The Creatory is owned and run by Jordan Miller, an artist, a fine arts graduate, and the recipient of the Winnipeg's 2011 Woman of Distinction Award. Miller admitted that it was difficult to be caught between the PPC and Omar's group, and that she felt bullied into canceling the space booking.
So once I got about 5 phone calls or something like that, I finished on the phone. I picked up my Facebook again, and I looked at all these messages. And they were begging me to stop this event. And I thought, oh dear, I have a $75 rental. I can make $75 doing something else in 1 hour. Maybe 2. I'm like, just cancel it. So I called Monique and I canceled. I was very upset. I was actually crying because I felt very attacked and very violated. And I thought, this anti-hate group is causing hate towards me. But I didn't have the time to read the articles that Omar sent me. And had I read those, then I probably would have canceled it right away. Also, when he threatened to put something online, I should have stopped it right then. But I didn't really believe that was going to happen. And I didn't realize the impact because I've never been involved in something like this. Like, everybody loves me, you know. And so to be shot down at some point, it was really hard on me. You know, I didn't want to lose my reputation that I've worked hard to build.
This is life and death for me. You know, this is not something I dabble in. This affects my community directly. You know, and it's mostly because white folks aren't taking care of their communities. They're not educating their youth. They're not thinking it's a big deal when people fall in the racist, alt-right, 4chan rabbit hole. You know, it's like, oh, you know, he'll get out of it. Nah, man, you got to work harder. That's all I got to say to them, man. There's a difference here, you know, a difference in like, yeah, we believe people can change. We believe people can, well, given the amount of information, not even just information, just given that love. You know, just giving a love and saying, you know what, we don't hate you, man. It's just you get just caught up on some other stuff here, and bringing them in and like holding them in your arms and saying, you know what, even though you thought that way about me, I'm still your brother. I still want to help you out through this.
For more details on Fascist Free Treaty 1, search for @FascistFree1 on Facebook. You can also find out more about the creatory by visiting CRE8ERY.com. This is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Our final feature comes from CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganigahaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. This past July, the Vancouver City Council considered passing a controversial definition of anti-Semitism that was written by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, the IHRA. This definition has been opposed by over 40 Jewish groups because, in addition to an innocuous approach to anti-Semitism, it also includes 11 illustrative examples. It is with these examples that opponents to the definition take issue. 7 out of the 11 examples reference that State of Israel, thus conflating anti-Semitism with raising concern about the State of Israel. This conflation stifles free speech when it comes to criticizing the State of Israel and support of the Palestinian struggle. Neil Naiman, an organizer with Independent Jewish Voices in Vancouver, explains further.
And even Kenneth Stern, who wrote that working definition, he never meant the working definition to be adopted by governments or police departments or anything like that. He himself has stated, since the definition was adopted, that he's concerned that this definition is being used to stifle free speech. And so has the BC Civil Liberties Association, one of the prime advocates for civil liberties in Canada, wrote a statement even before this controversy arose at the City Council in Vancouver, saying that the legal adoption of the IHRA definition in Canada is inconsistent with the values underlying the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and would greatly narrow the scope of political expression in Canada.
Winnipeg-based Harold Schuster, the national chair of Independent Jewish Voices, says that though this conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism is not new, the intense institutionalization of it is.
I think what's new is the level and the intensity, and this new definition that has been floating around for a while. The attempt to have that institutionalized within governments is new.
There have been a couple of cases already in which there have been attempts to shut down debate at various universities across Canada, where people have organizations have complained that Palestinian solidarity was deemed as being anti-Semitic because they deemed the criticisms of Israel that were put forward were anti-Semitic rather than criticisms of Israel, legitimate criticisms of the crimes of the Israeli government and the breaking of the law of Israel in contravening so many international conventions historically and today.
Organizers in Vancouver had 10 days to organize against the bill and were successful in getting the majority of city councillors to oppose.
We had less than 10 days to organize opposition to this motion. So we were able to lobby the councillors to make them realize that, number one, the definition in and of itself was problematic, and number two, the singling out of anti-Semitism alone was also problematic. Why choose anti-Semitism alone?
Harold explains why we are seeing an increase as of late in this kind of definition of anti-Semitism across Canada.
I put it down to the fact that we who are working in solidarity and support with Palestinians are winning the battle. You know, there's a saying that, you know, at first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. We are in the "they fight you now" campaign. The majority of Canadians feel that sanctions against the Israeli government are legitimate, that they are real and are needed. And more Jews are feeling the same way.
That report was brought to us by Sason Kadura of CKUT, with files from Michael Welsh of CKUW, and editing assistance from Omi Ramatula. You are listening to Groundwire, community news broadcasting from coast to coast to coast, and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. As the Canadian federal election takes off, the National Community Radio Association has joined with Friends of Canadian Broadcasting to champion a campaign geared toward robust support of Canadian public service broadcasting. CKUW's Michael Welsh brings us the details in the following report.
Signs are beginning to spring up on lawns in 22 critical battlefield ridings in the current federal election with the message, "We choose Canada, we choose CBC, and we choose Canadian journalism." Daniel Bernard is the executive director of the Friends of Canadian Broadcasting, one of the drivers behind the We Choose initiative. He outlines the concerns Canadians should have in the current media environment.
Print media in particular have been experiencing great distress. And so what we see is that this ecosystem that CBC exists in has been thinning out. And CBC has not been strengthened to be able to pick up the slack. And so Canadians are in this tough situation where this public good is increasingly not being provided because the public broadcaster has no additional resources. It remains among the most poorly funded public broadcasters in the world, and a lot of the private actors are also really going downhill. And just finally, I know this has been a long answer, but just finally, community radio is another really important part of the mix. And campus radio is a big part of that. And, you know, in a province like Ontario, campus radio is also taking a big, big hit as a result of changes that Doug Ford has made.
Barry Rook is the executive director of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, which is partnered with Friends of Canadian Broadcasting to bring about the We Choose campaign. He outlines what is at stake for his group's membership and for the general public when local media and broadcasters are not fostered and protected from big foreign media companies.
There is a concern that the Broadcasting Act, which is up for renewal, will not be completed if the Conservatives were to win a majority government, and that process would adjust and change. We know that that's a lot of sort of already in the air, and there's a lot of concern around that already, but it does mean that there is an opportunity for very positive change as well as a possibility for some negative side of things. The second part of it is that CCD, which is Canadian Content Development Funding, which is a set of funds that runs through the Community Radio Fund of Canada, comes directly from commercial broadcasters. So if commercial broadcasters are hurting and they are unable to make as much revenue, it actually trickles down to us, and our granting opportunities are reduced.
A growing number of Canadians are coming to rely more and more on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and these other entities for their information. Can you speak to the way Friends of Canadian Broadcasting is hoping to address that specific threat?
What Friends is concerned about is that Facebook is Canada's number one source of news, but unlike your station or newspapers or CBC or any other professional journalistic outfit in Canada, Facebook has no legal obligation to tell the truth. So, you know, they are exempt from so many laws. Canadians are getting their source of information from this rogue player. Government is totally asleep at the wheel. And meanwhile, Facebook and Google continue to suck the blood out of the advertising market, which sustains, you know, most private journalism in Canada. So it's a bad situation, and Canadian policy makes it so much worse. And Friends is calling on Ottawa to end the special treatment for Google and Facebook, to end the free ride, and more importantly, to end a slightly obscure but very, very expensive tax subsidy, which sends over $1.6 billion of our tax dollars to foreign internet advertisers like Google and Facebook every year.
So it's essentially encouraging advertisers to go to these major non-Canadian multinational companies in order to get their information out, and hurts community radio stations specifically because they don't get the discount for that, and it hurts the entire broadcasting sector here in Canada because they're trying to compete against these major groups.
As it states on the We Choose Canada petition, foreign corporations can't be trusted to put Canada's interests first. It's time to put the Canadian people back in charge. The future of Canadian journalism and culture should be one that we choose. If listeners wish to sign the We Choose Canada petition, or if they wish to put a We Choose Canada lawn sign in their yard during the federal election, they can find details on the website wechoose.ca. For Groundwire, this is CKUW's Michael Welch.
That was our community radio report. Up next, a short musical break.
Hello, so let's go.
Heard Holy Void with the song Infinity Drive from the album Not. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, the homeland of the Métis and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Catherine Fisher and Greg McDougall. We also thank Chris Cook, Michael Welsh, Sasswan Kadura, and Ome Ramatula for their contributions. Music this week was from The Rheostatics and Holy Void. I've been your host, Kristen Andrews. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwire.ca. Thanks for tuning in.